Hello and welcome to this week's Manx Footy Pod, sponsored by Conister Bank. For the 25th episode of the season, myself and Dave,
hi everyone,
are joined by referees Chris Deitcher and John McCallum to discuss all things officialdom. Right, chaps, before we pick up the whistle, so to speak, it's time to delve into the biscuits, isn't it, Dave?
Your favourite time of the week.
Yeah, so, Chris, we've already had a bit of banter off... I hate that word, banter. But we've been discussing off record about these biscuits. I've got ginger nuts this week. I thought I've got McVitie's ginger nuts, not just any...
They're a good make. I'm just not sure about them.
You're going to have one?
I will have one, right. Because I'm here.
I think they're smaller than they used to be.
Well, they're smaller, but... I just like a bit of chocolate on my biscuits, to be honest.
You would have loved
last week, clubs.
Yeah, I was singing that med all week.
Yeah,
so we've noticed now that the players get the better biscuits. Gary Waitman was on, got not so great biscuits. We're not getting any chocolate on our biscuits. Are we setting a precedent here for who you want to get into this podcast?
What you have got though is the agent Rashid Mugg with coffee. So
but I'm not too sure about that either. To be fair, I think we'll get round to that, won't we?
John, are you gonna have one? As I try and
don't choke me. Well, see, John's got his popular sports hydration brand drink there, so we better not talk about that.
Keep fit, make me hyper.
I had a Dr. Pepper at lunchtime, so if I'm a bit hyper, we know what it is.
The fact that you were choking on the ginger nuts says it all.
You need a drink with them. Mm. Otherwise, they're
chocolate. Dry,
chocolate on a ginger nut, that would be nice.
No, can you get them?
I don't know, actually.
Start the movement, let's get it done.
Maybe you'll have to look at your budget for next time.
Conister Bank. We might be able to get some. Right, we're not here just to discuss biscuits, are we, Dave?
Or Conister Bank.
We've got you guys to talk about refereeing, but in particular the Referee Society's latest recruitment drive, which is aimed at players reaching their twilight years, I was told this week.
To put it kindly.
Yeah. Doesn't say much for us, does it?
John, as a former player yourself, how would you sell refereeing to the masses, as it were?
Well, when I played football, I was retired 8 years ago, and I had probably the worst reputations in the combination leagues at that time. And when I broke my leg, I had a bit of time out, time to think, and I wanted to challenge myself. And when there was a referees course come up, and I knew we were short for refs at the time, I thought I'll have a go at that, see if I'd like it, and I did. I quite liked it. Mm. And when I got to the other side, football frustrates you, and on the other side, if you're a player, you can see how it frustrates you. And when I got into the park, you build your confidence during the games and that. You get put down in the fixture list, and you just get stronger and stronger. Mm. Confidence grows. And I'm enjoying it, you know. I'm on my 9th going on my 10th year, and I'm now at level 4, which is the top over here now, and I'm happy at that, you know.
Well, you're a regular in referee of the week.
Yeah, that's because I'm injured.
Me and Dates usually have a competition, but this season he's out,
So, John, was it hard to go from a player to a referee? Was it your
prime? Well, because at the time, I didn't like referees when I'd done it. So when I'd done the course and got on the team it wasn't hard, no. I find when I'm during the game of football, what helps me is I know the frustrations of the game, and I know when a player puts a tackle in or if he doesn't get a decision, you can look at him and you can tell the blood's going to his head, you know, and he's going to end up kicking out with someone and that. Sometimes you have to just say, look, I know what you're thinking, mate. Head down and carry on, you know, get focused back on the match, you know. But no, it's not been a problem with me and I'm moving into the game.
Deitcher, you've come up from a slightly different angle. You were coaching how have you found that, going from, again, another person that probably had an interesting relationship with a match official to being a match official?
I think out of everything, all referees, pretty much, we've got into refereeing because we love football, really. So we love football, so we stayed in the game as long as possible. I was injured when I was a player, quite early. So first of all, I played for Town and got injured as a goalkeeper. So then I became a really rubbish centre-half. So I became a dodgy centre-half, so I keep getting told lots of times. Played in the second division, played second division football. Then obviously managed Onkin for a number of years afterwards. Then I went to coach for a couple of years at Old Boys. And it was good and I enjoyed it, but stood on the sidelines. I think it's more frustrating being a manager or a coach than it is being a referee, probably.
Right.
Because you can do, you can have as many plans as you want, but you can't control them. Come that first whistle, you can't control any of it, really, I don't think. So I was just getting a little bit frustrated with that. Wanted to try something different. I'd been working at the FA as a community coach, so I did my referees course then. I thought, had a few games towards the back end of the season, and I just thought, I'm going to give this a go, see what it's like.
Yeah.
And pretty much from the start of the following season, I loved it straight away. I love being back in the middle, and even though you're not kicking the ball anymore, being back in the middle of the pitch, it's like being you're involved in the game.
Yeah.
And it's never going to replace playing, but it's as close to it, I'd say. Yeah.
How does it go from though it when you know it's supposed to, when you luckily enough to have assistants with you that but go from being in a team environment, you know, where there's lots of other players, to being on your own and sort of everything's on your shoulders basically, you know, is that tough?
When I passed my referees course, you do a day and a half course. The first day is in the classroom and the second day you're out in the field doing like scenarios and that. When I passed that on a Sunday, I got a message from Tommy saying, oh, you've got a match on Tuesday. And I thought, what? And I says, I've not even got a kit. He says, well, I've got a kit for you. But I didn't know what kind of kit it was, if it was going to be extra large or anything. But I was up at Pool Rose. And the good thing about being a player is when you go in that park, and the guys know you played the game, you've got the respect right away.
Right.
If you were a new face who came from a different environment, you know, it would be harder for them to settle in. Mm-hmm. But once the kickoff goes in, within half an hour of that game, you settle in quite quick if the players are okay with you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I think some people will find it hard adjusting, but they will get the coaching, they will get mentored. Mm-hmm.
I think that's where it's changed, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, from when we started refereeing similar times,
yeah.
I was a year after you, wasn't I?
Yeah.
So, but when I came through my course, it was very much of you went through the course, you went out and you were referenced straight away.
Mm.
And the funny thing is with refereeing is the better you get at refereeing, then you end up with a team again.
Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
You get your team of officials again because you're reffing the top games, which is nice. But when you start out, when I started out, it was very much a case of, right, you've got this game in the middle of nowhere, you're on your own, you turn up with your boots. Everyone's looking, thinking, who's this, Walter?
Yeah. But
you turn up, you walk in, and they go, oh, he's the ref. Jesus. Right, but then you turn in, but you're on your own. And that's how it was when I first started. But in 8 years, the difference now is massive. Because there's a lot... I think the togetherness of all the refs as a society is far better now.
Yeah.
But there's mentoring programs. We've got a decent number of assessors that are constantly out. So really, the new refs aren't on their own.
Yeah.
A lot of the time. Especially for their first 4 or 5 games, anyway. I did a bit of mentoring at the start of the season with being injured. And I've seen Barry Gaffney quite a few games. Jim Gale. These are lads that I think are ideal for the game. Because even though they're not playing on a Saturday, they've got loads of football experience and they're going to make better refs for it.
Yeah.
And it's great for us.
So, John, you mentioned the respect as a former player. As a coach, like, what was the respect like for you going into the middle?
I think, I've talked about this before, I thought it was very easy for me to go in the middle because I knew a lot of the players anyway.
Yeah.
And because you knew the players, I mean, maybe it could be a good thing or a bad thing, but you knew the players. So I always feel as a referee, you try and talk to the players where you can. Some of them will say, I probably talk too much and should shut up. I think the fact that I came into it that way, I knew all the second division players from when I managed Onken, then I knew a lot of the first division players, well, Premier League players, through my time at Old Boys. So I found that side of it quite easy. It's not as daunting because you're not turning up to 30 individuals that you never know or you haven't got a clue who they are. So I knew a lot of the players, so you could walk into the ground, you know faces straight away, you can say hello, and it makes you feel a little bit more at ease.
So if there's anyone listening now who's possibly in this bracket we're aiming this one at, you know, it's our age now, Dave.
Well, we know you're a top-class keeper. Are you going to be a ref?
No.
Top-class keeper?
Yeah.
Where's this come from?
Exactly, yeah. I've been building this up on the
club. I know, I've heard this on the radio quite a lot.
Well, I've never
seen a performance, though. You
only, just only conceded the 9 on Wednesday. You know, that's pretty good for 7-a-side. Yeah. I was going to say, what characteristics or would you say would make a good referee? Johnny, would you say if you were a bit of a chopsy on the pitch, would that make you a good ref? Or
frustration, you'd understand the frustration for a start when you go into the park in the middle. You probably have a strong personality as well. It's how, like, football, it's how you talk to the players, how you manage them. You've got, like, I was a feisty player and, you know, I was a physical player. You've got physical in the game now, but they're trying to fine tune it that it's more coming a more skillful game. But you've, like, what to say? Like, there is players out there. Andy Glover, I'd say Joe Andrews as well. Sometimes when the frustrations get to them, they just get carried away with the gobs. You know, I was like that. Exactly, and it's true. And just, you keep trying to manage them. Like Andy especially, he's a good, great player. And you try to manage him during the game so that it gets focused back on the game and carries on. It saves him a yellow card or a red card, you know. And you, there is other players that, well, I was exactly like that, you know, and I know that. I don't think when I was, as a player, I get managed them days with the referees, you know. But nowadays, we're more proactive, you know. Especially at the top of the game in the Premier League, where we know most of the players. Most of the players know you now, you know. And when you go in that park, you know, it's John McCallum or Chris Dyche. Look, me and Chris probably are the most vocal refs on the park. They'll hear us outside if a player is talking to us. We're not scared to shout at them, you know what I mean? Because sometimes you need that, you know, to get them back in the game.
Yeah, I think you talk about that. I mean, is there a particular... It is tricky when you turn up at a match and you don't have linesmen. I mean, that is a big challenge. And I know there is a problem sometimes getting enough officials. But is it... How difficult is that when you have to turn up at a big match, say, and you're on your own?
Well,
sometimes I don't think...
It's, you've got to realise, like, having assistant referees over here, it's a luxury. It's level 5 football. We don't get it. They don't get it in the UK. It's level 4 and above. It starts going for the assistants. But big games are getting used to them now. And the thing, they rely on them being on the match fixture. But when you're on your own, like, we know, like myself and Dyche and the other level 4s, we've got patrol paths. We've got zones to get into when we've got assistant referees. We're trying to keep the ball between them and ourselves. But when you're on your own, you just got to get yourself more active on the park, get into the right places, the drop zones and what have you, what's required. Like, if you, Premier League football over here is of a good standard. So they will build from the back, and you know that for the St. George's rushing and all that. They'll build from the back, so you're at the back and you move up with the ball, you know. If it's combination football, Division 2, where you're going to get hoof, if you're trying to keep that up there every game, you know, you'd probably die, you know what I mean?
That's the trouble. The thing is with being level 4 refs, you predominantly, most of the time, we get decent games. Get most decent games, and you might do, as you say, do Geordies, do Peel, do Russian, do Old Boys, all the top sides. And then every now and again, you'll get one thrown in, and you think, right, I'm going to work really hard to keep up with the game, and it's just impossible. But getting back to the point on linos, we've all come from football. So in football, it's a team game, isn't it? And it's a team, and it's nice to turn up at a ground, you know, where you've got someone with you. And it is nice. But that's where we'd say, with new referees, because we're here to try and encourage some new lads into refereeing. And the lads we want really are football lads that may be coming to the end of their days, football-wise, but they want to stay fit, they want to stay active, and they want to stay involved with the game. We'll make sure, if a new ref comes in, we'll make sure they've got a mentor at that start, so there's someone there to talk to and someone to bounce off. Because there'll be times in the first few games you'll think, what the hell am I doing? But... The ref society will definitely go down the route of making sure someone's there when you need it. And all of us are just on the phone as well.
Yeah.
As you can see, is when you get on the phone to John, you're there for quite a while. So maybe get your hobnobs, check about hobnobs, not your jets.
Like, I've had a few like messages off players if they've had a problem with the game, and they'll message me if it's, they think it's a referee. Mm. But you know, like, half the time, like, it's like a coach in a football team, he's giving the players instructions. We go in and we give our assistant referees instructions as well. They work from our instructions. It's not like when there's a big decision to be made, he's there to assist us and help us get it right 100%. You know what I mean? If that assistant referee doesn't put his flag up and I've not called it, then both of us have not got the angle to call it and we're not 100%, so we're not going to give it. The rule is, if in doubt, don't give it. Yeah. You know, it's simple like that. You know, you've got to think that way.
So we'll go back to last season. We had Scott Campion in one of our podcasts, and that was just, I think it was nearly a year ago, wasn't it?
Like, it was.
The start of last March, when we had a threat of a strike being mooted among officials because of the level of dissent being shown by players and managers. Now, I'd like to, I'm hoping, have things improved since then?
Well, that's for me, because I've been rapping. I've had nothing this season.
Well, in my games, I don't see, there is gobby players, like, as everybody will cross that line of dissent when they think a decision is going against them, you know, that they are going to say something. That's the personalities and the attitude in that in the game, you know, and it's the passion overflowing. But I don't see much of it now, you know, in my...
So it has improved since that point.
I think you've got to take it on. Every ref will be different, won't he?
Different.
This is the trouble, and it's hard to get consistency when you've got lots of different individuals.
But that's what Scott...
The point and Scott it is hard, made, isn't it?
Exactly. But it's hard because everyone's... good players, isn't it?
Everyone's got different tolerance levels.
Yeah, right.
Now, as a group, we have regular meetings where we try to become more consistent, but you're not going to be perfect. Yeah. We're amateur lads that are working through the week to go out on a Saturday. Same as the players. Mm. Right, everyone thinks they're brilliant. We think we're brilliant refs.
Well, we are, don't we?
The players think they're brilliant players. The managers think they're brilliant managers. But we're in an amateur game.
Yeah.
And we're going to go out. We're going to do our best. We're going to make mistakes. That's life.
Yeah.
And I think that's just what you've got to remember, really.
But I know at that point, I don't know, me and Dave were talking about this at the time with me, because we're obviously, we see probably more football, Manx football, than we should for our own mental health. But, there seemed to be a point, didn't it, where it was seemingly more acceptable to berate the referee. And now I think this season has been a bit different. As you say, there are still individuals.
Do you think from watching the games, have you seen more yellow cards issued?
Again, depends on the referee. I'm going to name names because I was at
don't, because they'll bring us later to
Old Boys and who were they? Corinthians for the week, 1-1. Peter Green was in the middle. It was 8 or 9 bookings, I think, which is a high for... I usually see two or three, maybe. But I don't know about that. And
the trouble is, where do you start, where do you stop? That's the trouble. But so my management style, and it is a management style when you're refereeing, my management style is to try and use your skills to stop it developing. And it's always going to develop at some point.
Yeah.
But the trouble is, if you...
But that's this word consistency again.
Yeah,
Peter made the decision very early in that match. What was a yellow card offence?
Laid down the mark.
And to be fair, he stuck to that, and that's why there was so many. Mm-hmm. But that, when we were talking about the consistency with Scott last year, his performance probably, if you'd ref that game, arguably, possibly, there'd be a lot less bookings because of your style. And it's not necessarily a bad thing, but it's just
hard, isn't it?
It's hard.
How many times do you watch the Premier League? And you see bookings, one referee will give a booking and one won't.
It's not happening
in the Isle of Man.
No,
it's happening across football. It happens in the Champions League, it happens in World Cups. That's the nature of it. You've got people with different personalities.
But that's the reality check sometimes that makes football, football doesn't have it. It seems to think that it's a professional.
Everybody involved with football, this is my thoughts on it, is everyone loves football and everyone's really passionate about it. So for them 2-3 hours on a Saturday, it's all you can think about.
Mm.
And it affects your brainwaves, I'm sure of it. Because it affects your total thinking. And sometimes you just need to step away from that. And usually after the games, I would say 99% of people that I've met in football can do that.
Yeah.
You know, they're as passionate as anything during the game for an hour afterwards. But then it might it might just be an hour halfway through, they'll think, right, do you know what? Yeah, he's still a bit of a knob. I should say that or not, but yeah, he's still a bit.
Hobnob.
But in fairness, he's made his decision and that's it. I don't get a lot of aggro, really.
No.
I was talking about it to one of our young lads in the college before, and he was talking about this interview, and I said, well, put it this way, I've never gone into Jack's on a Saturday night and been knocked out.
No.
So it's not that bad, is it?
No,
the boys are good in these, so yeah.
Watch me get knocked out.
Well, I think they're all with frustration of the game. I think the teams should maybe go to the pub after, reflect on the mistakes, you know what I mean? Try and take the referee out of it, because half the time it's not the referee. We try to apply the laws of the game. They play association rules, we apply the laws. We've got 17 laws to apply in that game. And also, if you look at the common sense, you know, that's another law you put in there. But you should talk about it in the pub after the game and then draw the line and look forward to next weekend again, because we're amateurs, you know.
But maybe only for 2 pints.
Yeah.
By the time you get to 10, it could get to Cardiff. Yeah.
We're talking about rules and laws. I'm going to ask a question that came up this morning to where you guys are. Chris and John, if there was one rule change you could make, to make your life easier?
I've seen this one, and I think it's interesting, because it wouldn't be a rule, as in a law of the game that I'd change.
Right.
It would be something in Manx football.
Okay.
Now, and I don't know if it's a rule or not, but predominantly over the years, when I've been refereeing, we'll go to matches, and you have your match, and then your match fee's paid at the end of the game.
Right.
Like, what I was talking about before is the passions of the game can take over. So in my mind, for the referee, which is a lot better for everybody involved, When you turn up at the ground, you turn up an hour before your game, you're there in plenty of time, you should be greeted by a club official, and they should there give you your match fee then and there.
Mm.
Because there's nothing worse than having to go looking for your money at the end of a game when you've just given a penalty against the home team.
Yeah.
And go, well, predominantly it's the home team manager that's got to give you your cash.
Yeah.
And you've got to go and you've got to look for them to give you money when you've just cost them their game.
Yeah.
And that's how they see it.
Yeah.
You've cost them that game, you give that terrible penalty.
That's it.
It's all your fault.
It makes sense.
Hate you.
It does, yeah.
So that's the one thing for me. And straight away, and where we're talking about encouraging new lads into the game, it makes it so much easier.
Mm-hmm.
I've got no problem with someone being a bit narked with me because of the decision I make. But why have that confrontation when it's not needed?
Yeah, takes it away.
So that straight away for me is that takes it out of the picture. You know, the next time you turn up, hopefully 3 weeks later, calm down a little bit.
Yeah. Hopefully. John?
I would go for law 4, the kit check. Rather than the referee having the responsibility to check all the kit, I would give it to the coaches.
Right.
We can make sure their team are dressed properly for the game. Because you go on, we're on about sock tape, and it's only, in my eyes, it's only tape, but the amount of hassle it causes just before kickoff is unbelievable.
People don't realise it. We get into football because we love the game.
Yeah.
And then people are thinking, what a nobby's going on about tape.
And you're running around, you know, telling them, change the colour of sock tape to the sock.
Yeah.
And then they start oohing and aahing, and you think, well, if that's the coach, it should be the coach's responsibility. Make sure they come out with that. We'll be happy to just check the boots to make sure they're appropriate for their conditions, you know.
Every club should have a kit man.
That's it. Well, I was going to say, a thing that's actually arisen in the last couple of weeks, and I want to get your opinion on while you were here, is with the postponement calls. Now, it's always, I think it still is, with the trustee of the pitch decision. Yeah. But I know in 2 or 3 weeks ago, referees were called to make decisions, I think.
Which is brilliant,
I think. And do you think this is the way forward? Yeah. So then it's the referees' call rather than the trustees? Or?
But we've talked about this plenty of times before, and we've talked about it, and there's loads of us all over Ireland. There's lads like us that would be more than prepared. Yeah. 11 o'clock on a Saturday morning, if you got a call, can you do us a favour, come down and just see what you think?
Yeah.
And then obviously it's 11 o'clock, the game's kicking off 3 hours later. Mm-hmm. But you could go there and you could say, look, this isn't going to happen today. Mm. We can make that call now, which is sound.
Yeah.
But then again, there'll be times where that might happen at 11 and you see the forecast and you're saying, well, at this moment it's still playable, but doesn't mean it will be in 3 hours' time.
Right.
So then the referee will have to turn.
Yeah.
I think the hard thing is everyone knows over here there's games that have been cancelled that should have gone ahead.
Yeah.
But now, when that happens, though...
It casts a doubt on everything
else. That's why we're having this discussion.
It's a tricky one, isn't it? Because, you know, a game could go ahead, and then if someone like breaks their ankle on a bad part of it,
that's the importance. The health and safety of the game comes into it. And when you're inspecting a park, if you've got, like I got asked to do, I was in the middle first, Old Boys against W Royals at Old Boys. And I got there, and the two misers were like, oh, I think you better come on and check the park, you know. So I said, right, fine. And I know, playing at Old Boys for 9 years, I know that the places that are going to be hazards. So the minute I walked on the park, and your feet start sinking, and that's a telltale sign. Yeah. It's still raining. 5 minutes into that game, that park is going to get swamped. And all it takes is a slight tackle on the foot to stick in there.
It is funny, isn't it? It's funny compared to 20 years ago. Because when I went to Onken, when I played at Onken, you used to go on Onken Park, and about 5 metres on the right-hand side of the pitch, just over the touchline, there was a collapsed drain. And it was guaranteed for like three quarters of the season, you just didn't go anywhere near. Because if you did, you were losing your boots. It was gone, no doubt about it. And you think now, where you played every single week, and you just—it was just a mud bath. And you think now, you look at the pitches, and it's great. Pitches are great, but then that brings all the other problems with it.
Yeah.
So how do you find that balance? How do you find that happy medium? It's not easy to do, is it?
I remember playing in the 14-16s league with Laxey, and when they were building the new clubhouse, and the referee or whoever it was before the game would just say, stay away from that bottom corner because there's glass and sand on it.
We won't tell the opposition. We'll let them have it over there.
Was that with cycling superstar Mark Cavendish?
Yes.
Of course. We'll drop that name in. Okay, we haven't done that this season.
No, it's been a while.
What position did he play?
To be fair, he only really did it for the fitness, the training. So yeah, I think he played up front once.
Tell you what, he took a nasty fall the other day, didn't he?
He did, yeah.
A fractured rib. So what are you going to do there?
Just Milan San Remo this weekend.
It is.
Of cycling fans, there you go. Bit of a cycling bulletin for you.
There you go.
Right, talking of bulletins, our Twitter questions. We've had a host in for you guys, because obviously it's pretty rare we get refs on. But
We just talked about Laxey, but yeah, Paul Callow has been tweeting. He says, what do you guys think the barriers are to mutual respect between players and club officials and referees? Yes. And what do you think can be done to improve this?
Do you know what? I find it funny because I when you talk about respect, I think I go out, I'll try and give the respect I think is due. But if someone's being an ass to me, I'll be arsey to them. That's just the way of the world, isn't it?
Yeah.
Right. But to be honest, I would say 99% of the time in Manx football, I don't have an issue. The managers, I don't... A few of them can maybe not step away from it and think a little bit retrospectively, as much as I'd like. Mm. But that's football, isn't it? They're under more pressure than I am. Because I've been in managing, and when I managed, it was hard. I got more stick being a manager than I've ever had being a referee.
Do you think there should be a dialogue between like the manager and the ref after the game?
I was thinking about this the other day, right? And what I'd love to see at the start of every season, let's have a charity football match. And we'll play the referees up against the football managers. Right? And we'll have that at the start of the season. We'll get some grub in a pub. And we'll have Peter a few Lewis pints dress. Afterwards. No, Peter's our striker. He's the fastest one of us. But I think something like that, you know, like try and close in the links.
Yeah.
And if you got in that environment, maybe it would make life a bit easier.
Yeah.
Or other than that, you wouldn't want a referee game, would you? But I think things like that could make a massive difference.
What would you say the kids are coming up through now, who have come through? I don't know, when Brian Callow was involved with the Junior Football League, there was a lot of respect stuff implemented at a younger age. Yeah. Would you say now these kids are maybe more official friendly, for want of a better term, than...
No.
Football's
football, isn't it?
No, they're still the same.
I think what is needed for kids' football... My young lads playing at Onken, they played for under 12s. Because it's not the laws, all the laws apply to these kids and they're going up in stages. I think maybe I was wanting to do a presentation at Onken, and then the 2 o'clock games come in and I ran out of time because it's 12 o'clock to half one.
Yeah.
And they were happy for me to do it, you know, an introduction to a referee and tell them all about the laws of the game in some scenarios. I think that's needed with kids. I think it would be ideal for a referee to go down and talk to the club.
It is getting better, make them
understand. Because that jump from 8-a-side to 11-a-side is massive.
It is getting better. My young fellow plays 11-a-side now in the under-16s league. And in fairness to Jerry Thompson does a great job. And he's got a lot of lads that will go out and referees Sunday morning football for him. So these kids now that are playing under-16s, they've actually got the proper officiating.
Yeah.
A proper official there to run their games. So that side of it, I think, is great. And they are getting booked now. And they're getting booked and getting sent off if need be. The one thing I I don't quite get is if the FA then turn around and say this 15-year-old kid's been booked and you have to pay a fine for it.
Mm.
Justin, not when you got a young fella like yeah. that. but that side of it's great, I think. But then I think you've also got to say, yeah, let's put referees there, but let's understand it's a stepping stone into the proper game. So yes, we can punish them, but punish them not by giving them a fine, punish them by making them miss a game of football.
Points, yeah.
Miss their football, that's the only way players will learn.
Yeah. I don't know, but I presume professionals, they accumulate something and they get, but do they get a monetary fine when you're a professional? You get both?
They do, don't they?
But I'm not sure. Asia Rashid, he's been on as always.
He's staring at me.
You're drinking from the mug there, Chris.
I am drinking from the mug. I'm worried though, why is he always on the bench? Is that why he's gone in to be a football agent? Because he couldn't get a game of football?
He's always scouting for new talent, isn't he?
He's scouting.
Yeah.
He can't obviously find anybody that place, can he?
He asks, would it be possible for football refs? It's actually quite a sensible question for Agent Rashid. Well, this first part is. Would it be possible for football refs to take a harder stance, zero tolerance, and talking back like rugby refs?
Right, I've got a brilliant point here. Because my old fella was a rugby man.
Right.
All his sporting life, he played rugby, managed the rugby team down at Malta when it was good. Yeah. And my old fella hates football.
Yeah.
And he says to me, ever since I've been a little kid, he used to come to my game and say, I'm not watching this rubbish. He used to go. But he said, rugby is the way rugby is because their governing body was so firm.
Right.
He said, in the years ago when he played, he said, if anybody give the referee that sort of abuse, the referee would send them off, he'd report them to the RFU, and the RFU would absolutely hammer them.
Yeah.
Not give them a one-game ban. So because of that, rugby is today where it is because of that situation and how strong the governing body was. Yeah. So I look there and I think, do you know what? Everyone says to me, descend, what can the referee do about it? What can the referee do about it? They say, well, we can just only uphold the laws of the game. So we can book a player. But there's nothing stopping the governing body to then say, hang on, we'll look at the way we discipline players. And we'll change that.
Make examples of them.
Well, yeah, because you might say, right, we have a 5 yellow cards, you get a game ban in the Isle of Man. Why don't you have a point system that says, right, if it's a foul tackle, it's worth 1 point or 2 points. If it's for dissent, you'll get 3 points.
Yeah.
So you know what? Then, instead of you getting 5 chances before you miss a game, if you do 3 dissents, then you miss a game.
Yeah.
So if you want to get rid of it out of the game, then the governing body have to do something about it. It's not down to us booking people on a Saturday. No. It's everyone's got to step up and everyone's got to do. And I don't think it's that bad anyway.
Can you approach the FA? Can you speak?
Maybe they'd be listening to this.
Yeah. But it's funny, isn't it? I was watching Six Nations the other night, and I think I've talked to you about this, Dave, and it was England versus whoever it was, one of the Friday night games earlier in the competition. Player got booked. Didn't say a word to the referee, actually ran off the pitch.
Mm.
No one else said a word to the referee. It was Nigel Owens was the ref, obviously, world-class referee. Yeah. And they just played on. There was no conversation. It was just right. No discussion of whether it was a foul or, you know, what. It was just, he's done that.
But then again,
yellow card.
Then again, I agree. Did you listen to the lads that were on on Meps' show
right
a few weeks ago?
Which one?
They were on the Friday night, I think they were. So there was Lodgie, Terps, and Sy was on there. And they were asked the same thing about rugby. And you say, yeah, we can talk about rugby and we can say rugby's really respectful, but is it respectful? Because fellas get whacked.
Yeah, it's punching each other in the face.
I can think in all my time reffing football in 7-8 years, I've probably sent off maybe 3 lads in that time for actually punching someone.
Mm.
So,
but then it's funny
when having
played rugby and watched it, you know, I watched Douglas on Saturday against Ballyloon in the big clash at the top of the North One West, where it was, and there was an incident. There was obviously some physicality between the two sides. The referee, and I'm not advocating this for football, let the first incident happen and then sorted it out because they almost policed themselves initially. Yeah. And I know we should be encouraging.
That sounds great. I think. Yeah.
But it's a different. As you say, it's a different.
He did.
He's, you know, I'm not being funny. You're not going to get in between two.
Which is funny because that's what you're told to do. You're told to do right. If anything happens on a football pitch, even step aside, watch the incident, and then
let it all blow over.
Let it calm down, and then dish out the cards afterwards. But then it's all down to personalities again, because. Mm. I think, you know, if I see it, I'll try and step in and stop it there and stop it before it's
out of hand.
Yeah, the way I know it also to control like incidents like that, the culprit, if you've got a straight red card, get the red card out quick and get shown it straight away. That'll calm them down, then they know he's going. Also, like, we step back in confrontation, we get told to do that, and it's always in our instructions, via, if you've got assistant referees, to get the main culprits that started it, and then work your way from red cards down to yellows.
Mm-hmm.
But 9 times out of 10, like, since I've been playing, since refereeing, like, it's all been handbags. Yeah. You know, they push each other, and sometimes I stand back and laugh at them, you know, and that is so. And the two guys that started it, I did pull them over, caution them, get on with it, lads, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Problem is, you see it in professional, don't you? I mean, look, Champions League this week, Barcelona versus Chelsea. Yeah, Barcelona are a great team, but they throw themselves around, and then you've got young kids coming through who think they can do that and stuff. And
it's rubbing off in amateur football, even over here, there is players that I could name, I've cautioned a couple of times, you know, and for the same thing.
See, they're just following role models, aren't they? Mine was Vinnie Jones.
The minute and I'll tell you what looks bad as well. They've been told by coaches, if you get touched, go down. Well, there is contact in the sport, and if they're doing that, and they go down, you see them playing off.
I don't think you see a lot of it in men's football, though.
No, I would agree with you. It's very rare you think, well, that was a dive.
Yeah. You get the odd dive. Get the odd dive. But I think in general, it's pretty fair over here, the football.
I think it's self-policing now, isn't it?
You're at my game where I was up Geordie's and I give a penalty. When they played Laxey one time, Joey Morland jumped up and he said to me, Dice, that wasn't a penalty.
Oh, no,
and I just got it wrong.
Yeah.
And you know
what did you do? What did you remember?
For about 2 minutes, I thought, fucking hell, what do I do now? Yeah. So but you've just got it. I just cancelled the decision. And I very loudly thanked Joey so I could try and sell it to everyone around the crowd.
Because I don't wish to keep harking back to this match, but I was at, I don't know if you saw the in my match report, all boys playing Corinthians in this eight card 1-1 draw. Gary Quirk, within a few minutes, went down the left winger, tripped over his own feet. There was a Corinthians defender sort of within a metre of him, maybe closer than that. Peter gives a free kick. Gary gets up and goes, no, I fell over. Peter gets the free kick.
Like, a lot of people can criticise things, players for descendants and the other, but situations like that should be really spoken. And let's use them situations more and talk about them more.
Than
the negative side of Manx football.
Mm.
I think because you talk about the negative side of Manx football so much, that's having an adverse effect on us getting lads in and want to be a referee because they think, well, I don't want that hassle. I don't want that.
Yeah, you're right. We've been told that. We need to speak positively.
Speak positively. Big up the Manx footballers.
Back to the questions. Agent Rashid is good question. Typically Agent Rashid question. Who is the most difficult person to ref in Manx football? Is it the most hated man in Manx footy, Mark McClurg? Now, Mark McClurg tweeted back to this and said he was a friend of the referees or something like that?
I think he was friendly with my yellow card. Because I think whenever I reffed him, I always yellow carded him. Mm. And most of the time was for a little bit of verbals, actually. Now I come to think of it.
Are the characters, I don't know, you probably don't want to name names, but are the characters you think are particularly difficult, you know?
I don't know. There's certain individuals, but you go into games, you're thinking, I'll have to watch
it. I'm going to give you a name, Callum Morrissey.
He's been quite a lot lately.
He seems to constantly talk to the referee.
Callum's a qualified referee now.
I know. Yeah. Which is
so I'm just waiting for the day that Callum hangs up his boots, and then he's going to be a really good addition to our numbers. And Johnny Myers, hopefully.
Yeah, well, I know Johnny's done a few Sundays.
Johnny's done quite a few games.
Yeah.
But their characters aren't his personalities. So where I think we talked about before about what makes a good referee, then it's how you try and manage these people. Because not everyone's going to be the same. On a pitch, you've got 22 people that you've got to try and manage. They're not all the same people. Some people, you could say, if they're a strong enough character, you could say, shut up, calm down. Other people, you might have to go over and say, look, that's enough now, you need to calm down. But it's like in every walk of life, you treat people through their personality and their characteristics, don't you? And people will treat us exactly the same way. Because people will think, oh, I can talk to Dyche like this, but I can't talk to such and such the same way.
Yeah, but let's flip that on its head.
That's life.
So, say if you guys went to do another game across, and you went to do a Northwest Counties match or something like that, how would that work? Because obviously you're not going to know the personalities, would you?
You just manage.
You need to see how the game pans out, don't you? And see the individuals that are capable of doing that.
Is that easier or harder?
If you go into a ground, though, and you don't know any of them teams straight away, if you're clued up, when you're doing your warm-up, you'll have a look at the players, right? Within seeing them two groups of players warming up, within inside 10 minutes, you know who the characters in them groups anyway. Because they'll show straight away, won't they? Yeah. Even in their warm-up, in around their other players. Yeah. And it's the same within a game. Within a game, you'll know what them personalities are like 10 minutes into that game. So you know what you've got to look out for.
Just going back to Mark Clerk.
Is it
a Falcon for the North?
Yeah. Is he still playing, by the way?
Combi, I think.
He's never played, has he? I've always seen him in a touchline.
I thought he was all right, actually. A bit tall, hasn't he?
Yeah. Strapped up with stretched bandages.
Scores a few goals. Yeah.
Well, he said, me? Surely not. I never get involved with the refs, as I appreciate the fact they have a hard job.
Yeah. I think Mark's the ideal person we're looking for to swell our ranks.
There you go. Mark's listening.
Stay involved. Football, come and join us.
He's Adrian Rashid, his third part of his question, is it possible to give somebody a red card over Twitter? Now, this is, it's quite, I referred back to the rugby, but did you see there was some, before England-Scotland the other week, there was a fight in the tunnel as the two teams came out. The question was asked of Nigel Owens, could he have taken action? And he said, no, it's only from the first whistle. So I'm presuming it's the same with...
Well, football's different because you can send a player off before the game.
There you go.
You can send a player off before the game, but they can still field 11 players.
Have you ever done that?
No, but I remember, I'm trying to think of the referee years ago, and he was an MHK or something like that. He was in the...
Phil Kermode.
Yeah.
Phil Kermode. Yeah. I remember playing for Onken, and we were down playing on Castletown, because Onken didn't have their pitch, and we were playing on Castletown's pitch. You know their reserve pitch or their training pitch?
Yeah, yeah.
We were playing there, and it was a cup game, and we were warming up, and I don't know if you know, there's a lad that played for us called Paul Presley, and Presley was a big blonde lad, dead loud, dead vocal. And we were doing our warm-up, and he was messing about as normal. And he said something, and Mr. Kermode came over and showed him the red card. And went, that's it, son, you're off. And this is like 20 minutes before we even kicked off. And everyone's like, what? Can he even do that? Yeah. Well, luckily, he was a bit of a character, wasn't he? So he was just winding him up.
As we say, did it set the tone for the game?
I thought it was funny.
I remember a game, and he's a referee still now, and it was a semi-final Old Boys versus Peel, Old Boys, and I was spectating because it was first team football, and he gave a penalty. It was a dubious penalty, which I never thought it was a penalty, and Peel scored it, and they won the match. And as he's coming off the park, I'm clapping him, and I says, well done, referee. I says that's garbage, but the different one in. And I left it at that. Matty Evans was our chairman at the time. He came out, he came over, he says, John, he wants your name. And I says, well, why does he want a name? I'm just spectating. He says, because you're still part of the club in the club. He says, and I'll need to give me a name. I says, oh, well, stuff, I'm telling it then. And I got a 35-day ban. I do think the FA had that in for me that season.
Probably saved him a fortune. Yeah. In fairness.
Right, we should also ask, which is, he hasn't tweeted, but Agent Machine would like to know, what do you think of his cup?
Maybe should we talk about it for him?
Yeah, well, he didn't.
I do like it, but...
He looks a bit more... a bit miserable, yeah.
I don't know, what's with the cap on the other side? Because cap with a shirt and tie just doesn't go,
because does I think that's what Super Agent's dressing, isn't it?
Is it?
Yeah. You Google.
So who's his clients then?
He wanted Furrow Davies.
He wouldn't Furrow, but he wouldn't sign.
What can he get for you?
What can't he get? Yeah.
Pack of chocolate hobnobs.
Would he?
Yeah.
Is he looking for referees? He can be my agent.
There you go.
Two packets.
And a pint. Right, next to his question, in from Paul Blair. Bit of an interesting question. Why do referees have such big ego trips that you can't even ask a question during a game without getting threatened with a card?
Can I answer that? Right?
Yeah,
answer
go on.
I get it in the games. Players will ask you a question during the playoff thing, just after the infringement, or they think it's an infringement and you've played it on. They will ask you that question during when you're running up the park, 20 mile an hour, and they're trying to get it out of you then, and you're trying to tell them, go away, like, you know, because play on and that. Yeah. You try to tell them. But it? Yeah, and players, what players need to get, and like, they probably say I'm not, but I am approachable when the ball's out of play or when there's a break in play to ask that question. You can't, when the game's flowing, you cannot.
I think that's a hard question for us to answer.
Yeah.
So I would turn that back on you, Steve, because you two watch games of football every week. Yeah. Do you think that referees aren't approachable in games?
I think it's personality. I think some aren't and some are.
No.
I would say, this is a point that Scott raised again last season. He said exactly what you've just said. Yeah. Players are asking you at the wrong times half the time, so that's where they get short shrift. I also think, as you say, sometimes they get a bit carried away and probably over a minor thing in the grand scheme of things. But I do think some referees are better
diagonal. I don't mind. When I'm refereeing a game of football, I don't mind answering a question when I think it's justifiable.
Right.
Right. If someone says, ask me a question about a foul that was a blatant foul and they're trying it on, I can't be asked with that. Mm. And that's dead simple. That. If it's justifiable, I'll give an answer. If someone's asking me just over and over and over and over again, I don't think that's justifiable.
I think that's a fair point as well.
I don't think it's an egotistical thing or anything, because I think as a ref, you have to believe in your decision.
Here's the reality of refereeing that. Throughout a 90-minute game, you'll make the decision that you think you've seen.
Yeah.
Right. And that's what you're making. From the angle you've seen it from, you're giving what you think you've seen. That doesn't mean that 100% is going to be right all the time, does it?
No.
But what you have to do is, if you're refereeing a game, you've got to believe in what you've seen.
Yeah.
You've got to believe it. Because if you didn't and you start dithering, what sort of mess is that going to make of a football
match?
Exactly. And it'd
just be gone.
When I first started reporting matches, one of the big things I used to see a lot was Mark Stevens. He used to get all the players together before kickoff and he'd speak to them. And I know a few refs do that, which is good, because it already opens up that dialogue, and it does make the ref more approachable, I think, during the game.
Does it though?
No? Well, do you not think so?
I don't know, because when I was managing a football team, right, if I was giving my pre-match team talk and the referee came into the room, I don't know if people listen to him there. What I'd prefer is that we say, do you know what, in football over here, and every ref will be different in this respect, but for me, I'd prefer to go in and say, right, here's the deal, we'll turn up an hour before kickoff, we'll get up, we'll go out and get warmed up. What I'd like to see is half hour before kickoff, the captain brings the team sheet to me from both teams at the same time.
Yeah.
We could have a chat to the captains, and the captains can go back and talk to his teammates.
Makes sense, yeah.
Yeah.
Because then you're not trying to talk to 15 players. You have that one conversation with your captain, then let's use the captains.
Yeah.
And the majority of them are good lads.
Yeah.
And use the captain well.
Scott said the same thing. He said the captains could possibly... I think we might have asked him the same question about what changes would you make, and he said, I'd make the captains a bit more responsible for their teams. Yeah. He said, they should be the ones that are coming to us. And again, I suppose someone's talking on about this, but this is something that happens in rugby, doesn't it? The captain in the referee.
It happens
through the captains.
In the Premier League, it happens, isn't it? One of the coaches and the captain go to the referee.
I'm not sure.
It's definitely one of the management team, but I don't know if the captain's in there as well. But I think you've got these lads, and we want them to be the leaders of their team on the pitch. Well, give them the responsibility then.
Yeah.
Now back to our favourite refereeing incident of the last few years. It's a question for you, John, actually, from Tim Colster, scorer of the ghost goal, made famous by the Sun. He said put Malou on the map, really, didn't it?
Nice football as well. Yeah.
Did Johnny Hogg actually see that goal I scored go in? He must have told you the truth.
No.
I can't comment on if he told us the truth. I don't know why he's complaining, because he's seen two good goals for the price of one.
But
I think he was probably just gobsmacked that Tim hit a ball.
It was some strike, wasn't it?
I bet he could never do it again if he tried. In fairness.
It is a viral clip that will go down in the history.
Dean Turton also tweets in, what are your thoughts on referees on social media? Do some take it too far with their comments, or do you think they feel the need to explain their decisions if someone says it was incorrect who had a better view of the incident?
Well, I'll tell you what, and this is straight up, I wouldn't get into an argument with someone on a Saturday night over a decision I've made. Because for the simple fact, if I did it, then it'd be on and on and on and on and on, and my missus would be fuming. Do you know what I'm tucking into my Chinese watching the next time? And I'm on my phone going, no, no, I really did see that foul, honestly. Yeah.
And then about four my people who weren't there that would come in on top of it.
Yeah. And what about ours last week? Yeah, you shot them there as well.
Yeah. You do.
It doesn't, it just wouldn't, would it?
There should be some sort of control. The FA has got, you can get in trouble for going on social media, and especially for slagging down referees and what have you. They have got a bit of control on that, so they if it was reported, they would be up in the dispute charge for that, and it would be up to the FA what they're going to give them. But I believe in freedom of speech. If they talk like just a normal conversation, you know, and the referee gives them an answer, but it's not going to happen probably on Facebook.
Right, well, we've got you in. Let's have a look ahead to Saturday's fixtures. There's a hodgepodge again, Dave.
It is, and well, it remains to be seen what games will actually go ahead, but we've got a bit of a mix of Cup and League matches this weekend.
So we'll start off in the Woods Cup. Where are you two guys? And obviously you're still injured, aren't you?
I'm still injured.
Well, any time frame to come back?
I'm just looking at next season now, really. I'm being realistic, because I don't want to come back. The way this season's going,
you could, yeah.
I don't know. I could still be there for the last five or six fixtures of the season. Yeah. You never know.
John, what have you got? You got
I'm on the big one, Russian right. Corinthians.
Well, we'll have a look at that one in a second. We've got the three remaining Woods Cup quarterfinals, Groundhog Day as it were. The third time these have been attempted.
Yeah, it's pretty much last chance saloon, really, isn't it? It's obviously we're edging ever closer to Easter.
Cup final weekend, as it's known in certain quarters of the press. Woods Cup, so we'll start off with the Union Mills cast. I obviously had the Union Mills boys in last week, Dave. They were saying this is probably their biggest game of the season.
It is. It is their last realistic chance of silverware this season. You know, it's a bit of inconsistent season for them. Castletown are top of the league. They'll fancy their chances because they're still on course for a possible league and cup treble, which would be a fantastic season for them. But yeah, I think conditions are going to play a big part in this if it does go ahead, because it's going to be a bit windy up there.
Don't give away Dave Reed's weather just yet, though. Guys, I don't know how much football you've seen this season, Dice, but Castletown, you know, Division 2 as a whole is absolutely anyone's at the moment.
I think it's good for the second division, isn't it? Because for so many years, and I was involved in the second division, for so many years it was the top two, and then it was, you know, like, let's run through the season and play some football, and them two can have everything and just share it between them. But now it's like you say, it's wide open, isn't it?
Six teams would be the reasonable chance of going.
Really both league, like, if you look at the Premier League and you look at Division 2, they're all close for their top spots, and for the relegation in the Premier, there are four or five teams still there, aren't they?
Yeah.
So it's heating up.
I haven't seen a lot of games, but I know Foxdale have had their problems with their pitches, and I know they're going really well this season.
Yeah.
And capable of beating everyone, but what are they like with games? Are they miles behind? Or?
They've played 14. You look, see, Castletown and Morana played 16, as have Pulley. Oakland played 17. Yeah. So, you know, in theory, you know, if Foxdale to win their games in hand, they would go into the promotion places.
But all three Woods Cups tomorrow, ties tomorrow, look evenly poised. I think we discussed this last week.
Pulley are going well, aren't they?
Yeah,
they do well. I think they just need to get back to winning ways, because they lost to Foxdale down at the Bowl a couple weeks ago. It was a 94th minute.
That was supposed to have been a belter of a game.
Yeah, Hattie was bits after that.
He was.
Foxdale Moran is the other tie, so just to run through that. Foxdale Moran, Michael Pulley, and Union Mills Castown. All three, I would say, well, so Pulley should be firm favourites for that Michael game, I'd say. But the other two could go either way in my eyes.
Yeah, Castletown will start as favourites, but Mills, you know, I think, as I say, it's the last chance for silverware. They'll be well up for this. The boys were in confident mood last week, so. Yeah, this could be a close one.
I think the Union Mills, if they keep
you just don't want to be lining up at Mills.
You don't want to know when the wind.
If you're down the bottom end and the wind's coming across.
Bloody flag going.
Oh, I'll tell you, a nightmare. The good thing about being a lining up at Mills is there's a radiator in the dressing room. Yeah. And you can sit on that for 15 minutes.
This is the sort of insight we need.
Yeah.
Castown favourites.
Castown, if Mills can keep Little Girl quiet, he's been banging the goals in recent weeks. And if you can keep him quiet, it'll go closer. But I think Castor might edge that.
We're all sort of back in Paul Rose. Do we think in that other game,
Paul
Michael?
Rose, Paul Rose, me.
You'd fancy him, wouldn't you?
And just a point on that game could yet be moved to Groves Road. I saw a tweet from Michael United that said that would that affect the comedy?
See, that Groves Road pitch isn't used much. You know the low one opposite the NSC?
No, I think, I don't know what's going on there.
Because we use that For many years at Onken, we used that pitch, and they've levelled it, and it looks really good from the road.
Yeah, well, Onken and D&D played in a combi match there a few weeks ago, and it held up okay, I think. So, I wouldn't be surprised if that was a backup.
So, I'm not sure. You know, when there's so many pitches that are getting affected by the weather, and they're getting heavy and muddy and unplayable, if there's pitches that aren't getting used very regularly, why not just get a game on there?
Yeah.
Get there and get a game on it.
But that one could be moved, as could the Foxton Round match, which is scheduled for Billy Goat Park. But as we look out the window and it's still raining, that's probably already under about a foot of water.
Could possibly go to Crosby, but even there,
that's a bit of touch and go. So, but that's it, another, should be a crack. Brown are in great form at the moment.
That's it, but I could possibly win that one.
But Foxton will obviously be on a high after that that last game.
I think that one's going to go all the way to extra time and probably end up with Monkey Brains in the Crosby after.
Them two play each other in the league again before the finish.
Yeah,
that could be a big decider. Promotion that game.
Brown have come up on the rails in Cheltenham parlance. So they were certainly a team to watch in that division. I've watched them a couple of times in the last few weeks, and they look well equipped to.
Higginbotham's in good form, hasn't he?
Yeah, since he's moved up front, I think he scored something like 11 in, or 10 in 3 or something. That was going to be a close game. That's not the only knockout action tomorrow, is it, Dave?
No, there is one French Provident FA Cup quarterfinal match which has now been shifted to the bowl.
Yeah, Braddon St George's, which was never going to happen at Braddon this week's weather, let's be honest. No. Should be a St George's win. The holders should advance into the semi-finals. The semi-final draw's already been done, isn't it?
So it should be. Well, they'll go up against Corinthians, won't they? So, I expect a comfortable win here.
Obviously, love the ball, don't they?
Honest, I think I'd have favoured more playing Geordies on a mud bath.
Yeah.
Rather than let their wingers free and all that space down the bowl.
Yeah, it doesn't look. It's going to be a long shift for Will Smith and his boys at the bowl tomorrow. There's four Premier League games on tomorrow. These kicking off at 2:30. FA Cup quarterfinals kicking off at 2:30 as well. But the rest of these games are kicking off at 2:30. Off with the game you're doing, John. Russian Corinthians. This looks a bit, could be a cracker, isn't
it? Yeah, it's a cracker. But I think Russians get played more games, I think, on that to Corinthians.
They played one more game.
If they win, they're back in it again. But again, Geordies are sitting with a couple more than them, games in hand.
Yeah.
So if you want it run right to the finishing line of the league, you would go for Corinthians in that one and hope to keep the pressure on Geordies.
I've said in the paper today, yesterday, when it came out, I'm losing track of days, this is almost a crucial game for these two title ambitions, because a loss, even though it's pretty tight, with the games in hand the other clubs have got, could knock them out.
It could,
I think they're still, have Geordies just slightly got the edge still? But I think now it's getting so much better for Manchester football, because it's not just one team chasing them now. I think there's a few teams that are really starting to up their game.
Yeah.
And it's going to make, I think over the next few seasons, Manchester football will be far better for it.
I agree.
Far better for it.
It shows you,
this will be a great game.
The consistency Geordies have put together over the past 12 years, though, doesn't it? They just relentless determination to ground out.
I think we're all looking for it. Not just one team. We're all looking for a few teams to step up now.
Let's
have a really good competitive league, and it'll make the football better for everyone.
I think this is a big game for Corinthians, though, especially because if they can beat Russian at home, it shows that they are now serious title contenders.
With Jonesy and Burnsy down there, though, Russian are very well organised.
But they're
very well organised.
They're very Russian, though, aren't they? They could be world beaters one day and horrendous.
Yeah, well, I was in the middle for the Geordies game, that they beat Geordies 4-0. A 4-1, I think it was 4-0. And Russian played fantastic, and then 2 weeks later they played at home to St John's and get beaten. What's going on?
Well, you never know with Russian. They've got the lead top star goal scorer, Dean Kearns.
Yes, that this week. Goalkeeper came on, left wing, scored a tiny finish with his left
foot. It wasn't a header then, because he's about 7 foot tall.
Oh, he's about 7 foot. I watched it, Patty captured it for posterity on his YouTube.
Fantastic.
And he down a left wing, quite sprightly as well, for
a
big lad.
A little hit,
And he's put it in stride. I'd need three to keep up with it.
But that gives Burnsy some options to think about now.
Just in case Joshua might get injured or something.
Because Dorsey was back in goal, clean sheet for Dorsey.
Did he start this?
Clean sheet. So, but a few interesting selection headaches for Burnsy for this game against Corinthians. Again,
a good game, though.
Yeah. Were we saying the draw is not helpful for either, though?
I think both. Hopefully both teams go for the win.
Mm.
Russia will
make a real game.
Russia are the only side that have not had a draw yet this season.
There you go. I think that sums up Russian perfectly. Elsewhere, we've got the game you're going to, Dave, out west.
Fingers crossed.
St John's versus Peel.
What a game this is. I love this fixture.
Yeah. And it's the first of two, is it, as well?
Obviously. Yeah, they play each other 7 days later in the cup.
That's a brilliant fixture. One of the best games I've ever had to ref was St John's Peel midweek game under the floodlight. No, Friday night under the floodlight.
Yeah.
And it just made the atmosphere even better.
Was that when Pete Kelly got the late goal, late winner, 2-1?
No, I think it was 1-0, was it? Was it 1-0? Okay. Great game, though. Great atmosphere down there.
Yeah.
And this is a tough fixture.
Tough fixture.
No holds barred.
It's obviously a Western derby anyway, but... Yeah.
There's so many added subplots as well. Rick Holding back against his old club. St John's unbeaten.
St John's doing well, aren't they?
Yeah.
Give Rick his due, he's done a really good job
there. He's turned them into... They've kicked on, which is what they've threatened. You know, they've established
which is what we're saying. That's what I was saying before about teams kicking on. And it's great to see. Maybe St John's weren't probably in your first thoughts of a team that could kick on. But now you think, well, maybe if they kick on again.
They got to the Railway Cup a few years ago, didn't they? And then they sort of tailed off a bit. So if they can build on this, keep going.
Well, that's it. And Peel look like they've got it.
Yeah, they're playing very well. I still think they'll be hurting from that loss against St George's. That was their chance to get a win.
Yeah, I fancied them there as well.
Yeah, I did.
They might do something there.
It was surprisingly lackadaisical for them. They just didn't seem up for it, which amazed me.
Yeah, but they're going to have to be up for this one, especially if we want to keep the hat and the ring for the Premier League title.
So what's happening with that? Ash Webster, is he coming back next year?
I haven't heard.
Last night he signed for some... Yeah, I saw on Facebook, some team in Australia. So Peel, Lee Gale's been the man for them at the moment. He's coming back into top form.
Another hat-trick last week. You know, he just did the stuff, does he?
It'd be interesting to see how Rick deals with him, you know, because St John's are some of the parts, really. Reese, obviously, you'd say probably the one with that little bit of something extra that can make something happen. But I can't call it.
What a midfield battle it will be.
Johnny Holland will be.
So have they got Damo back in goal?
Yes, he's back. So, he came back last week. So.
He's quality.
He's good.
Very good keeper.
So it's mouth watering game. Who's in the middle for this? Do you know who's got the point?
In the middle for that is David Murphy.
So big game for him.
What a lad to have back for Arnhem.
Yeah.
With his experience.
Yeah.
So top referee.
Top referee for a top game.
I think this might end in a draw, to be honest.
Yeah, cancel each other out.
I think Peel will obviously start as favourites, but yeah, draw.
Deitch?
I think I'm just going to go with Peel. Just. But it'll be tight. It will be tight, I think. One goal.
Yeah. John?
Yeah, I think Peel will edge that one.
I
think it'll be a good game, though.
Yeah, it's going to be cracking.
The thing is, if we picked it up, it probably wouldn't even go ahead.
The park is... there's an issue with St John's at the moment.
Yeah, I think you'll get value for money if it does go ahead, Dave. Douglas Athletic, Colby. Now, Colby are on... This will be their 20th game. They'll only have four left after this.
Is this Purvey's first game, is it?
No, he was in charge against Peel last week. Yes, obviously, we thought it was Colin Purvis for a nanosecond last week, didn't we? It was obviously Craig.
No, he's got hair.
Yeah. Craig is this is his first league match in charge, Douglas Athletic, after Brian Gartland's departure. This is going to be... It should be a home win, but Colby may see this as a sniff of some points here, won't they?
Yeah, well, I think Colby will take heart from the fact that Ramsey beat Douglas Athletic a few weeks ago, which has given them just a hint of hope.
Yeah.
So... For Colby, as you say, it's last chance saloon. They've really got to...
I think it's tough down Athletic's pitch as well.
Mm. Yeah.
When you ref there, it seems small, the pitch. Yeah. It's narrow, it's tight. Yeah. So when you get games like that, it can go anywhere, really.
And they play to their strengths, don't they?
Yeah. Well, they play to that. But on the other side of it, if I was a team going there, and I was thinking, well, we're maybe not the favourites, it's easier to play on a smaller pitch and tighten it all up.
Well, I think Martin Cowan's in good form for Athletic, so he'll be the main man to watch.
I
think Athletic should just about win this.
John, do you agree?
I'd go for Douglas Athletic.
Yeah.
I think it could be quite an easy.
So what was Purvey like on the sideline anyway?
It was Eric that was at the match.
He was stuck in the shed, so he probably didn't really hear much of Craig.
The other... match in the Premier League tomorrow sees Laxey welcome Ramsey to Glen Road. Laxey, I've only played first team, I've only played one game this year.
That's not great, is it?
And that was a 4-1 defeat.
See, that's surprising because I think their pitch is nice as well, don't they?
In the FA Cup, wasn't it?
Yeah, so we are mid-March, and they've played 11 league games.
So not even halfway.
Yeah, so that is...
There's one game for me to ref when I come back. Yeah, yeah.
You might have to do two.
A couple of Laxey games in June, then.
I think, yeah, Laxey, on paper, should start this as favourites, but Ramsey will sniff blood in the water, won't he?
After that,
Ramsey's got some good young kids there.
Mm. They have. I think, you know, there's always one team that looks destined to go down, and then all of a sudden they do pull off a bit of a great escape, don't they? So, could it be Ramsey's year?
Possibly, I mean, yeah.
They've still got 11 games left, so they've got plenty of time.
Yeah,
I think sometimes you look at that. What's the average age of that Ramsey team? Oh, quite young now. Yeah,
well, if you take Tora out...
Tora makes it about 53 now.
Well, no, it's probably Collie and Robbie Collister and Lewis are probably the older heads in that team now.
But I know it's a negative, but if they do go down, remember what Old Boys did when they went down with their really young team?
Yeah, keep it together.
And they played in that second division, up that second division the following season and came back up a far better team for it.
The only thing I'd say, the difference between Old Boys and Ramsey would be, Ramsey are in this vortex of the North where they all go around, don't they?
Yeah, but they don't stay in the North either.
We'll come down to that. Laxey are now
the lads out. Peel, John
Shields.
Yeah,
good point, yeah.
You've got a few of the lads are out there now. The
Northern Triangle now.
Johnny Shields, the most talked about hairline in Manx football this week.
He hates it, doesn't he?
I don't really say much because he's my missus' cousin. If I dissed his hairline... His dad would be fuming.
Gary Waitman seems to have got off to a fine art of capturing his...
Yeah, what did he say? What was something like, if it's raining and it's windy, I know Gary Waitman will be down to take my picture. But yeah, I would say, I'm going to go for a draw in this.
I think Laxey will sneak this.
You know, because Laxey haven't played much, I'm going to go out and I'm going to say the kids at Ramsey are going to win.
I think Laxey's going to win it.
Laxey's youngsters, we will obviously talk about them later, but they did well in midweek. So we'll
talk about that at the end. Two games in Division 2 tomorrow. Your old club, Deitch Onken, I'm going to say at home, but they're playing Ayr at Grose Road, a game that's been switched from the spiritual home of Stock Car Racing because of it's been underwater since about November. So, Onken should win this.
I'll tell you what, Onken are doing brilliantly.
Yeah, this David Rees
done a great job.
David, Mark, who are you going to call him this week? Mark, Joe. Dave has real problems.
I think the club of that as a whole. Like, I see the stuff that goes on behind the scenes with the juniors. That club's been fantastic, and it's going to be a natural progression for them, and I could see them in a few years' time being in the First Division or Premier League.
They should be.
Hopefully. Fingers crossed. They've got some good kids coming up underneath. The structure behind the club's great, with some people that put in a hell of a lot of time and effort. So I hope it goes well for them.
I think I've been a tad inconsistent this season, and we can't see getting any points out of an Onken team that is still in with a shot of promotion.
They are. I mean, Ayr have played 19 games, so they're running out of matches quickly as well. But yeah, Onken, they're in fourth at the moment. They're within touching distance of promotion, so they'll be well up for this. And I can only see an Onken win, to be honest.
John?
Yeah. I'm the same Onken.
Yeah. The other game in Division 2 sees Douglas and District welcome Maloo to Nobles Park. D&D, when I watched them a couple of weeks ago, they weren't at their best. I think the Oracle, Dave Matheson, would be the first to admit that. This will be an interesting game, though. Maloo have been very hit and miss, haven't they?
Yeah, I think consistency has been the bane of their season, to be honest. But D&D, I know they had that bad result a couple of weeks ago, but they beat Ayr, and they're into the semi-finals of the Woods Cup, which is a huge thing for them. Yeah. So, you know, they'll still be on a high.
D&D are one of them teams where you can go to Nobles Park sometimes, and they'll get a result.
Mm. Yeah.
If you're not up for that game and 100% up for it, D&D will take points off you. And they have done consistently through the years.
Daniel Shuklag's in really good form as well. So, yeah, they've got the players to hurt you.
What do you think, John?
I still think if Dean Kinley's up front and he's on his game, I think he could take a few goals in for that game.
Yeah, he could hit a football.
When you look at the signings, when Maloo got them signings, I'm surprised they're not competing for the
it's
league.
It's a temperamental team.
That's their downside. If they've got all them players all playing together, I think they'd have really pushed on.
But they've played 18, but they're only 4 points off fourth at the moment.
So they're still there.
There's still a chance of Gold Cup, but
I think at the start of the season, when I seen the signings they got, I thought they'd have been a bit more ambitious than sneaking into fourth place.
Yeah,
I know that. I bet at the start of the season they were thinking about that themselves, really.
I think so. I think they imploded slightly, to be honest, midway. They seem to have picked it up a little bit in recent weeks.
Yeah, but. Well, I saw them at the. Were you in the middle for this, the Paul Rose game down at Cladvane, I think? I'm not sure, but their discipline just let them down, and it has been a story of theirs, but they've got some brilliant players.
They're a side, you know, where we're talking about the second division being really close, they're a side that'll make a big difference, who wins points. The title or not, because they've got the ability there, when they turn up on the day, they could beat any team in that league, without absolutely. A shadow of a doubt, and they could have a big say in who wins the league, who's promoted or not.
Yeah, I think obviously the big draw for them in the pre-season was the free subs, and it'll be interesting to see what happens
going forward.
Whether they can keep a hold of those players, whether they're going to do that again, I don't know. But if they can keep a hold of that team, then there's no reason
why. It's a brave move, that, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Brave move, yeah. But brave. I think at that point they struggled to get a combi out last season. That
hands
was
off,
last roll
hands up, and massive, massive congratulations for what they did, because they've fielded two teams all season, haven't they?
Yeah.
And they never did it last season.
No.
So it's a brave move, and I hope it works out well for them.
Yeah.
Really great.
Now time for the world-famous combi corner, Dave.
Well, you know, it's going to be a little bit different because...
There were no combi games last week.
So it makes it a little bit different, but yeah.
That's not much of a corner, then.
More of a cul-de-sac this week.
But I'm going to actually look ahead to this weekend's games.
Okay, right.
Because there's a big clash in combi one at the top. The top two go
hopefully.
Head-to-head.
Put the asterisks in.
Yes.
Weather permitting.
Fingers crossed at Bal Fletcher, Corinthians will host Russian. The Spaniards are 10 points clear at the moment, and they played two games more. So a win for Russian would all but end the Whites' title hopes. Watching on will be Otter Boys, because they've got so many games in hand. They've got, I think, what, 5 games in hand on Russian. So, you know, they'll be waiting for any sort of slip-up. Mathematically, if Otter Boys win all of their games, they'll win the title. But it's still a bit of a free horse race there. So
fair though, you see, with all them games, they're going to come thick and thin right at the end of the season.
They're going to have 3 years.
Hopefully, when the sun comes out, then the pitches are rock hard. It's hard for players. It's hard to play three games in a week on rock hard pitches.
I think if you Old Boys are at home, obviously Old Boys are playing Geordies. They're away at Glen Country Road. Whether that'll go ahead, who knows? And also, of course, we've mentioned it in the Premier League, but there's a Western Derby. PLV St John's, which should be pretty tasty.
Nice
as well.
And tasty, yeah.
There is an additional fixture in Combi 2. Foxdale, the Youthy, has been added to the list, but it's going to take place at Scorigori.
Yep.
If I pronounce that right.
And then Youthy still cutting a dash in Combi 2, are they?
Yeah, they're still 6 points clear, one cut at the top. It is pretty much a two-horse race because third place Castletown are further 10 points behind.
I've seen Youthy this season, actually. Their Combi's a good side.
They've only dropped 2 points in 17 games. So
play some nice football, actually.
Martin Murphy's refound his
goal
scoring boots.
He's helped significantly to their plus 95 goal difference at the moment. So,
there you go. From one tremendous feature to another, Dave reads the weather.
Oh.
And then we look it out. I think it's raining, isn't it?
I think we should start getting our guests to read this because it's horrendous. It's mostly dry and windy overnight, but it's going to be cold. Possible sub-zero temperatures and higher ground.
Sub-zero? Gary Moore, then.
So what I want to know, more importantly, is I'm teeing off at 10 to 8. What's it like in the morning?
It's going to be cold. Very, very cold.
Is it going to be dry, though?
Yes.
I can deal with the cold, not the rain.
Get your thermals on, you'll be all right. Yeah, it's going to stay mostly dry tomorrow. It's just a question of how much damage has already been done to the pitches. Fingers crossed we do get some football going ahead.
Fingers crossed.
Guaranteed lots of Guinness tomorrow. That's the only thing.
Right, any other business, Dave? And we'll start kick off with Brian Caron, the Royal manager, is now the new Isle of Man FA Women's Team manager. So that was announced this week. I think it's been rumoured for a while, hasn't it?
It has. We've got that in the Independent. We've got a bit of reaction from him.
Yeah, I think he's yet to name his backroom staff. There's been some names linked with it, but yeah, it could be quite a strong team if he gets it together. The next point of AOB, Liam Doyle's USL season starts tomorrow with a game against Louisville City away.
He's been doing the media rounds this week, hasn't he?
Did you watch that? That YouTube?
Not yet.
It was like Blair Witch. Someone had obviously filmed it when he was. I don't know. It
wasn't up at Gary Moore with the wind.
Well, it might have been.
Probably more likely with a few lads.
Well, he is. Is he club captain, isn't he now?
So he's going to have a good
season.
He's
been really well, hasn't he?
He's been rolled out in front of the media ahead of tomorrow's big game.
That's it. Well, good luck, Liam.
Yeah, good luck. Yeah, so it's Nashville away at Louisville City, but second tier in America. Let's see how he gets on. Wednesday night, Dave?
Yes, we alluded to it before with Laxey. Their side beat St John's 5-1 in the Appleby 16-18 FA Cup. So a good win for them. I don't know what St John's team was like, but Laxey's was strong.
Yeah.
They had the likes of Joe Walters, Matthew Wilkinson, Andrew Burkett.
Yeah. You know,
a very talented squad.
Yeah, I watched that game. They were good.
Yeah.
I believe St John's had a few missing, like.
Right.
Yeah.
One of the guys in touchline, but. Yeah, they're just too strong for them.
Like, bodes well for Laxey. Talking cups, it's the Masters FA Cup semi-finals on Sunday. Do you never fancy? Did you play Masters?
I played Masters for 1 year, and I got my gloves back on. I thought I'd be a goalkeeper again.
And
I was still hurting on Wednesday. And we played on the Sunday, and I thought then, do you know what? My days are numbered as a goalkeeper.
I played it for Douglas and District, thinking I could do it for fun.
Yeah.
But my girlfriend was telling us the sideline says, you're the only one running that part and you're running looking like a maniac.
I support that.
That was that ejected in.
This is, you know, where we're looking for new refs, and we want lads that are finishing football and hopefully to stay in the game and then start refereeing. I look at this and I think, why is the Masters football put on a Friday or a Sunday? Right? These are the people we'd like to get into refereeing. Why not think about, could the Masters football go midweek? You know, if it went midweek, and then the perfect thing is, you're saying, right lads, you can play Masters on a Wednesday night or whatever, and then why not get into refereeing? Because you can use the game on the Saturday as a referee to keep your fitness up for your game of footy on a Wednesday night then.
It's interesting prospect.
Makes sense, yeah.
That'd be good,
that. Well, this weekend is semi-final weekend in the Masters FA Cup. I think that it has been played a little bit with walkovers, hasn't it? Yes. As has much of the season, to be honest. Laxey face off against Douglas Royal and Colby take on the ever strong Peel, which is pretty much their first team. Minus one or two. They both play at the bowl on Sunday, one kicking off at 2:10 and the other at 3:40. So it'll be interesting to see who makes it into the Masters FA Cup final.
Good luck to all sides.
Lads, thanks for coming in. I hope it hasn't been too arduous a task.
It's a pleasure.
Maybe you can listen to all.
I'm going to take a ginger nut with me.
Go, yeah, why not? Take two of
you. You protested too much at the start. You did
like... This is because we made him come in his lunch, isn't it? Remember, you can listen to all the Coniston Bank Manx Footy pods at audioboom.com/channel/Manx Football, as well as on that there iTunes, Dave.
Well said, mate.
Right, until next week.
Ta-ta for now.